This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. If you thought you were listening to something else, well, you're going to be much more pleased about listening to us. I'm Macca. My co-host is Janet Jukes. Our guest this morning is Melbourne's first directly elected female Lord Mayor, Sally Von Kapp. Come on down.
Was that my intro? Am I on?
You're on, yes.
Good morning, Macca. Good morning, Janet. Lovely to be with you.
Good morning.
Now, during the election campaign, I had cause to message you, Sally, and then I got a message back that you were not in Australia, you were in the United States, you were at the graduation of one of your sons at, which, was it Yale or Harvard?
At Yale. In the US, yeah.
So, how, well, one, you know, it was a bit of a trip and a family reunion. Those graduations in America, they're quite a thing, aren't they?
They really are. They go for days. And they haven't had the full throttle graduation for a couple of years. So we really benefited from all of the pomp and pageantry, lots of ceremonies, lots of processions, and lots of parties. And it felt really appropriate and a great celebration.
Yeah, it would have been fantastic because they do really turn it on for those things. I wanted to ask you, Sally, were you surprised by the election result?
Oh, it's a good question because I remember 3 years before when it seemed like Labor was a certainty to win and I certainly thought that was going to happen and of course it didn't and so I became quite nervous about calling a result. I think what has been surprising beyond the major parties is to see the number of independents that have been elected into our federal parliament and to understand the sort of change that our population are looking for. And as a woman, I've got to say, I'm really excited about the representation of women both across parliament and in the ministry.
I think that's probably, you know, that, I mean, a lot of the commentary has been around the influence of women on the election result and I think it's pretty clear that women have definitely spoken about the type of parliament they want to have representing us across the board and the behaviour that we would expect. Do you agree? Is that something that you think is the case?
Yeah, I think it's really signalled a change into the type of leadership that we're looking for and a leadership that is more representative, that hopefully will spend more time listening and can really lead on issues that are important to the majority of Australians, like sustainability. And another one we're excited about in Melbourne is the commitment to affordable housing.
Well, there's a couple of commitments, and if I may be so bold, I reckon you had a crystal ball, Sally, because you got a funding commitment from Federal Labor for a project that is very dear to the council's heart, Green Line. And
we did. And
how good is that? Sorry, I'm channeling.
It is absolutely fantastic to have recognition from the federal government that city shaping projects like Green Line are worthwhile and valuable and make a difference is brilliant. We're really looking forward to working closely with them. This is a big project that will go in phases, so it's a long-term commitment and ongoing relationship that we're building with them, but we're absolutely wrapped. But Macca, of course, we did take our big projects to both of the major parties seeking support, but we're really glad that that we got that support from the new federal government.
Now, you've got to get some money off the state too. Which minister are we going to give a hard time? Who do you want to hand over some money from the state government, Sally?
You know, we're getting great support from across state government, Macca, so thank you. Really good discussions. And the thing about Green Line is it's more complicated than we imagine, because there are about 8 agencies that have some sort of ownership or authority over various parts of the banks of the Yarra, Melbourne Water, VicTrack, Parks Vic, just to name a few. And the important thing has been working really closely with them to make sure that the project meets all of their strategic and operational goals as well. So those discussions have really been the most important, and they're ongoing and very positive. So that sense of really working together to deliver something that will make a manifest difference to the city has been terrific, and it's very strong.
What's the time frame, Sal?
Well, we're starting work now. It's been underway in terms of planning. We've had a whole lot of interest from fantastic design firms from around Australia and overseas who want to come in and help us with some of the really big challenges, like getting across some of those big intersections. We will see shovels in the ground. That's something you've been pushing me on, Macca, and I love it. But it will take about 6 to 8 years to fully deliver 4 kilometres.
6 to 8 years?
Yeah, big project.
4 kilometres?
And I've just been on Little Island in the US and also Highline, and understanding that both of them took about 20 years to make happen. It certainly won't take that long in Melbourne, but these are big projects, so it will take some time.
Look, there's so much going on in the city of Melbourne. Janet and I are looking at the list, and I don't know. I don't know where to start, Janet. Which one do you want to start with?
Oh, it's just, you know, I mean, just the must-do this weekend. So there's a Shop the City, which I'd love to talk about, but the Rising, the Food and Wine Show, the night markets, the Donut Festival,
Donut
I could probably get into that because Paul bought donuts in this morning, the Cat Lovers Show. I mean, there's really no reason anymore to be sitting at home. After all the lockdown, some of us are a bit reticent about getting out, but there's plenty happening in Melbourne.
So where should we start? What about we start with Terps and Tucker? The Good Food and Wine Show, Sally.
Well, there are certainly no reasons to hibernate this winter, and that list is really an indication. There's also a Corgi afternoon tea on in the city on the Sunday afternoon as part of the Jubilee celebrations here in Melbourne.
What, Corgi sandwiches or...?
Yes.
Is it restricted only
to tiaras?
Is it restricted only to corgi owners, or can any dog lover attend with their tiara?
I don't think they'll discriminate. They won't discriminate. That's a big focus for the Queen's Jubilee on corgis and tiaras.
I love that.
But look, really, there is such an incredible range of activities for people to get involved in. As I said, we don't want people to hibernate this winter. Rug up, and you can start with Shop the City, really, to buy yourself a new coat or puffer jacket to make sure you're warm as you get out. I went to the Rising opening at My Music Bowl on Wednesday night. Absolutely spectacular. And the great thing about Rising, which is on till the 12th of June, is that the majority of events are free or very reasonably priced to make sure it's completely accessible to people. And some of the performances and exhibitions will just blow people's minds. And, of course, as you mentioned, we are food-obsessed still here in Melbourne, whether it's donuts, truffles or tucker. There is plenty to do to make sure that our bellies are full and we continue to be connoisseurs of fine food and wine.
Yeah, get a bit of tucker into your... Nothing like it.
And, of course, you can get around on an e-scooter.
Yes.
I love the e-scooter. I get around on e-scooters because I work. Good. I live in Fitzroy and I work in the city. So there's been a review, has there? of the e-scooter trial?
A few things on the go around transport, yeah. Janet. Thank you for opening that.
We'll come to bike lanes in a minute.
I was coming to that. Yeah.
Let's start with e-scooters, shall we? Because there's just been the millionth trip in Melbourne of people travelling on e-scooters.
Amazing.
They've been resoundingly and enthusiastically embraced. They've been used at a quicker rate than any other city around the world. And the companies running the trials put that down to a couple of things. I'm going to do a lead-in for you here. The first one is just the number of festivals and events in Melbourne mean that active transport and people looking for alternate forms of transport, the scooters have been incredibly popular, and their busiest weekend were the 4 days over the Grand Prix. And then the second thing is we do have a fantastic network of bike lanes that e-scooter riders can use. So when people feel safe, they will jump on those alternate transport like e-scooters, and we're certainly seeing that play out. And the great news is that 45% of those trips replaced a car trip, and that almost 80% of those people did economic activity when they landed, whether that was in City of Melbourne, City of Port Phillip or City of Yarra. So resoundingly successful from our perspective. The trial continues till the end of the year, but we're expecting more of the same.
So bike lanes, Sally, you've been in the news.
Yes.
Now, I'll be up front here. I am not the biggest fan of the bike lanes, but I am a car driver, not a bike rider. And I think, is it right to characterise the council as having a little bit of a, perhaps not a reset, a rethink about the implementation and how to do it better? Is that a reasonable way to characterise it?
Yeah, well, look, we've done a transport review with a report to be debated on Tuesday night just to make sure that the transport strategy to 2030, which we released in 2018, which is a major strategy and came about after much research and evidence and data, that is still not just relevant, but given the pandemic disruption, that it's still valuable and it's delivering what we would expect across the city. Overwhelmingly, the independent review has come back and said, yes, keep going with your transport strategy. But we have noted a couple of things. Firstly, whilst we're in those COVID quiet months, we decided to accelerate some of the work, and part of that was the rollout of the protected bicycle lane. So we actually brought a lot of that work forward when the streets were quiet. And the report is suggesting let's take a pause in the next 12 months in the HODL grid, given that's where the majority of the work's been happening. I think that gives everybody time to adjust and settle, and if we need to make further improvements, we can. But at the same time, we'll continue to deliver bike lanes on those important feeder or arterial roads into the city to make sure that people coming in by bike can be safe. And actually, out of the transport strategy in terms of bike lanes, that was really the number one reason, is that for people using bicycles, we do need to provide safe spaces for them to travel. And that has not changed at all. We absolutely need to provide safe spaces for people to travel. We do acknowledge that bike riders still make up just a small percentage of the overall transport network, about 5%. But at the moment, protected bike lanes take up only 1% of the total road space. So majority of space still available for car drivers, plenty of space available for public transport and for pedestrians, and providing safe spaces for bike users is important too.
Well, I look forward to the outcome of that. Now, as a commentator rather than a news reporter, I see comments by news reporters, people such as Tony Tardio on 3AW, who tweets all the time, oh, look, there was a bike lane and there was no bikes in it and sort of stuff. You know, Tony, you need to take a chill pill. You need to actually understand that the bikes and cars have to coexist. Now, I don't expect you to comment on that, Sally, but Tony, you know, get a grip. Come on. Seriously. Yes. Now, when we come back, so we want to talk about some of the other things, you know, because there's stuff happening next week. But I had a from a listener here. Can I please ask the Lord Mayor, is the council going to really look at engaging Melbourne designers, contractors and professionals for Green Line? We have no need for international talent to do this. I know council always tries to source locally. Is that, you know, it's going to be a focus sell?
Yes, and our procurement policy definitely reflects that. And my understanding of the responses to our expression of interest so far is that mostly they're big groups of organisations led by locals, and where they feel they want to bring in some international flair or design experience they have, but there's a predominance and definitely a focus on locals. So let me assure you of that. But of course, we always want to make sure that we've got an eye to what's happening globally and where we can learn and do better. And we want this to be a spectacular global project that really brings a lot of global interest and visitors, as Highline has done for New York. So very conscious of getting that good mix of influences for this project.
Great. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Janet. And just quickly, Janet, we've had a lot of emails and messages about the bike lanes and, you know, car doors and, you know, comment, why do bike riders not pay insurance? You know why? Because, one, it would be very, very difficult, but also with cars, the third-party system we have, insurance system, actually covers injuries to bike riders involving a motor car. So it is a debate, you know, but, you know, if you have a view on that, you need to actually contact your local MP and encourage them, because, believe me, there's a greater divide here than there is between the Teals and Josh Frydenberg in Kooyong. Sally Capp, we're back again. Now, Janet, you want to talk about...
I'm loving that, as somebody who's been working in the city all the way through the various lockdowns, the shopfront activation program, Sally. And I can see, so I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that program and some of the amazing things that seem to be happening as a result of that.
Yeah, thank you, Janet. And it has been a terrific program. So, of course, at the height of pandemic, we had empty shop fronts at about 28%, which was extraordinary and very sad. It's down to about 15% at the moment. And part of that has been, of course, businesses reopening following the pandemic. But this program, which has really encouraged retailers, hospitality, venue owners, entrepreneurs and artists to consider coming in and having a bricks and mortar presence in the city. And we've been overwhelmed with interest from people that haven't had a footprint in the city before or haven't tried an in-person presence, so a lot of online businesses, about 500 applicants to come in and try. It's meant that we've filled up a lot of those empty shop fronts, but it's also been fantastic for the experimentation and the exploring of what works well and what doesn't. We've had some established businesses like Elk, for example, expand their footprint in the city, but some new and innovative businesses, I'll give you some examples. There's a chocolate business where you can literally paint onto the chocolate and create something unique as a gift. That started up in Little Collins Street and is now taking a permanent presence down at District Docklands. It's gone so well. There's an amazing company that are making coats and outerwear, which was a term I hadn't heard before, Janet, out of recycled blankets. And they've set up a studio and actually literally making the coats down in Docklands, which is fantastic. And in Howie Place, it's become a real sort of artisan's hub with businesses like Mr. Cuff, Eclectic, and Edie Brown, who's making beautiful jewellery, again, on site. And it's enlivening the city, it's bringing people into the city, and it's giving these artisans and entrepreneurs the opportunity to try a bricks and mortar presence.
So where is Howie Place? I'm just trying to place it.
Yeah, it's actually one of the original arcades in Melbourne, and it's a covered arcade, and it runs off Little Collins Street just near Swanston Street, across from, or just near the old David Jones building.
Ah, yes.
It's got Hunt Leather on the corner.
Yep.
It's got a new hotel actually going in the other side there called the Howie.
Yep.
And it feeds into, I'm not sure what it's called on Collins Street, but it's a good walkthrough actually down towards the Dimmicks bookshop.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I know
which
it
used
is.
To be Australia on Collins, I think.
Yeah.
Again, it's one of those laneways that it's great for people to discover. So if you put in Howie Place, you'll have an experience you haven't had before. And it's completely set up for Shop the City this weekend with a big cloud installation. There are cannolis and hot chocolates being supplied by Brunetti's free for shoppers. And lots of special offers, and you'll see those sorts of experiences right across the city.
Now, there's an exhibition that starts next Friday, I think, at the NGV, the Picasso Century.
Mm.
That's going to be pretty cool, isn't it?
We're so lucky to have the National Gallery of Victoria and the exhibition. The Gabrielle Chanel exhibition brought in hundreds of thousands of people to the city at a time when we really needed it. And I think it broke some records around the world in terms of numbers that came to see. It's now followed by Picasso bringing together works that we've never seen before with so much of the Picasso story. So I can't wait. And then there are wonderful local exhibitions like Bark Ladies. If you haven't seen it, absolutely extraordinary and free to visit Bark Ladies, showcasing some of the extraordinary art coming from Arnhem Land and some of the newer artists together with some of the more traditional art that we expect. So I really recommend people make the time to get to the NGV. Something that's local and something that's international. It's a fantastic place to be.
The Winter Night Market at Queen Vic Market. This runs through until the end of August. So if you want some of the best street food, not just in Melbourne, but in the world, this is the place to go, isn't it?
And there's no warmer place to be on a Wednesday night, Macca. I can tell you the crush of 10,000 people on Wednesday when it opened was absolutely brilliant. There's lots of live music, best place for mulled wine or glühwein, if that's what you like to call it. And as you said, street food, lots of demonstrations and a bit of shopping along the way. The night markets really have been incredibly popular. And that whole precinct around Queen Victoria Market is now changing very quickly as our renewal program keeps going. And we're seeing more and more businesses come into the precinct, which means that it's really feeling alive 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and the night markets add to that. But as I said, if you want to feel warm in a Melbourne winter, come to the night markets on a Wednesday night. It's awesome.
There's plenty of yummy food, I can see when
Thank
I'm looking down all the
Thank you for letting me be such an advertisement for Melbourne this morning. I'm loving it.
You could actually wear your new piece of outerwear.
That's right, outerwear.
Yes.
You might need a new piece of outerwear. But we shouldn't just stick with food and clothing. There's also the Constellations, which is that Butterfly Club is opening on Monday. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, so the Butterfly Club, again, one of the institutions of Melbourne that not everybody knows is there, and always looking for edgy, creative and talented artists to support. So Constellations will be another great offering brought by the Butterfly Club. And it just reminds me, as we're talking through these things, that without organisations and the team behind institutions like the Butterfly Club, we just wouldn't be the special, unique destination that Melbourne is. That sense of discovery, of seeing something new, of being exposed to artists that, you know, you would not otherwise see. I've had some speeches lately just talking about the why a city is still relevant, and certainly in Melbourne we've had a strong mix of being a central business district and a central entertainment district for some time now, but that's really coming to the fore, and it reminds us that, you know, you don't get exhibitions and performances like you'll see at the Butterfly Club anywhere else across Victoria. I've been saying, you know, Hamilton's not drawing crowds to Richmond or Brunswick. They're all in the city, and Harry Styles is not going to be playing in Mordialloc, and Constellations is only on at the Butterfly Club in the city of Melbourne. And we're really grateful to, you know, the entrepreneurial and very determined way in which institutions like that continue to up the ante and bring people in.
Got a message here from Kirsty from Elwood. Went walking about the city last night and it was really gorgeous. I stumbled across a new bar and a great Aussie music exhibition in the Arts Centre. And Kirsty says, great to hear Sally Von Kapp on Joy again. There you go.
You've been renamed Sally.
And the new, you know, the new multi-million dollar gallery, the NGV, are building. What impact is that going to have, Sally?
Oh, enormous. I have just been in New York and I went to the Whitney, which is the big contemporary gallery in New York, and they had their biennial underway, and queues and queues of people to get in to see extraordinary contemporary art. And it's a draw card. It's a global draw card as well as a local one. It is an absolute beacon for commissions of really provocative and I think important contemporary art. And as I was walking around with one of the guides, she said the big thing about contemporary art is that it's as much about the storytelling behind the inspiration for the art and the materials that have been used as it is about what you actually see. And that's certainly the journey she took us on. So to have the NGVC there in the Melbourne Arts Precinct is going to be a real game changer, and really well done to the state government for having the leadership and putting the investment into something that will be so important for us and for our artistic community. Can't wait.
Well, as I said at the beginning, Sally, I work in Melbourne and I live in Fitzroy, and going through the list of all of the things that are happening just this weekend and in the week to come, it's just there's really no reason to stay home. People need to get out and get into Melbourne really support the city. So it's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for taking us through this journey and to explaining e-scooters and bike lanes and other things. It's always great to talk to you.
It is.
And thanks so much for having me.
And it's a pleasure, Sally. And just a heads up, your deputy, Nick Rees, is co-hosting with me on the 18th of June.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
I will be listening in.
So
that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna speak to him about
yin and yang.
Bike lanes.
Save all the hard questions for him, please.
That's right. Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Macca. I really
appreciate your time your leadership of the city.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.